From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, the number to call is 800-462-7413. And along with your calls, some topics to talk about, Zorba?
Yes. Well, sitting is the new smoking, but what about standing? Are there side effects from that? We'll talk about a new study out of Canada that's most interesting. And pet allergens, getting your pet near you when you're an infant may actually reduce the amount of asthma that you have later on. We'll talk about a very interesting study.
A recipe?
Yes. This is one I promise, Tom, you're going to jump head over heels. You're going to do somersaults over this. You're going to jump in the air and go, wahoo! It's the Midwest Beet Burger. That's Midwest Beet, as in B-E-E-T Burger.
Wahoo.
I know. Exciting.
Let's get to the phones. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Welcoming our first caller now, Zorba, a listener in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi. I am 65 years old, and recently my husband and I embarked on a hiking expedition in the Rockies, about 6 or 7 hours a day, and we got through it with no blisters and no sore muscles, and I was feeling really proud of myself until the airplane home from Calgary to Jacksonville. And when I got off the airplane in Jacksonville, both my knees were swollen, you know, ballooned up, and I could barely walk. It took about a week for that to subside, and I used compression, you know, braces and things like that. But I'm just, it's a mystery to me why that happened and why it happened when it happened. And I was just wondering for future reference if you had any clues for me.
You were hiking for 4 days. Tell me a little bit about this. You were walking, obviously, Calgary. That area is beautiful. You were in Banff, or where were you?
We were. Yeah, we were in Banff. We stayed in a place that offered a kind of a four-day hiking package with guides, and that was perfect for us because we're not great researchers. And
What'd you do to plan for it? Did you do any exercise before that to plan for it?
Well, we're pretty fit, but no.
No, okay.
No.
So you got that on.
Walking,
you then got on the airplane going back. You go directly from Calgary to Jacksonville? Did you stop in Chicago or somewhere directly
on
there?
I can't remember. We travel a lot, but I think we had a stop in JFK for a few hours. But
on the airplane, did you get up and move around?
Maybe once, just your typical trip to the restroom. But no, I didn't walk up and down.
So you got off the airplane, and all of a sudden, bang, you noticed your knees were swollen, huh?
Yep. It took, you know, maybe 12 hours to get home. We had a long layover. Mm-hmm. And by the time we got to Jacksonville about midnight, I was, like, noticeably in trouble. And it's just been such a mystery.
Well, first of all, let's look at what swelling is. Swelling means there's inflammation. And so it means that along the hike, you had some inflammation in your knees. Obviously, you were doing some things that produce some inflammation. And the mystery is why you didn't get the inflammation when you were on the hike. I'm not as mystified as why you had it on the plane as why you didn't have it on the hike itself. And the fact that it took a week to resolve is kind of a long time. Anything in the legs and the lower legs, because one of the things that we worry about are pulmonary embolism and deep vein thrombosis that can be bothersome in the lower legs. Anything in the lower legs, you know, around the calf muscles, were they swollen at all?
Nope. There was a little bit of ankle swelling.
Mm-hmm.
That happens sometimes.
Sure.
We do a lot of long flights, and so, you know, I sometimes wear compression socks if I'm going to travel a long way, but I didn't this month.
So, no, you didn't.
I just didn't think of it as a long trip.
Well, one of the things we do, you know, looking forward, you know, in the future when you go on your next hike, you know, is to wear what I would do if you go hiking again is I would get some neoprene knee sleeves that you have, you know, that basically do a compression along the knee. And I put those on either during the hike, but obviously during the hike it didn't bother you. I would put it on when you go back on the airplane, because, you know, it's possible that if you kept on walking, it would not have bothered you. But the fact that you were just sitting, you're not moving, you know, you're cramped into those seats, you know, you're like sardines in a sardine can, and you just were not moving, and your body, you know, was just still saying, hey, I'm a little bit inflamed in my knee, give me a little bit of movement to get that, to get out that extra fluid. And what I would do is I would wear neoprene knee sleeves on the airplane. That's what I would do.
That's really helpful.
You know, a compression sock is good, but it's not around the knee. And the thigh-high compression socks can be very hot and very uncomfortable. That's an alternative, too. But I would just wear I'd wear a compression knee sleeve on the airplane. I'd probably wear compression socks, too, if I wanted another hike. I would just move forward and say that that's a possibility. There is something else I'd recommend. If you're going to go hiking, for 2 to 4 weeks before you go hiking, hit the elliptical. Ellipticals are great for hiking because you're moving up, you're moving your legs. It's a very similar thing. You'll get your circulation going. You'll build up those blood vessels. I would do the elliptical for 20 to 30 minutes, maybe 3 days a week, and I do it for a month before.
That's really helpful. Thank you. Would you recommend knee braces while hiking?
No, I wouldn't. Because you were not having any trouble hiking. So if you weren't having trouble hiking, I wouldn't bother with them. I mean, you could wear the neoprene compression sleeve, but you weren't bothered hiking. So, you know, that certainly is a possibility. But I would, if it were me, if I'd bring it with me. And obviously, if after a day of hiking my leg were swollen, I'd put on the neoprene sleeve the next day. Because otherwise, they kind of get hot and sweaty. You know, you've got to look at comfort. How did you like the mountains there? I think they're some of the most beautiful mountains in the world I've ever seen.
They were astonishing to me. I'm used to New England mountains, which feel friendly, and the Rockies were almost overwhelming. They were just stunning.
Yeah,
we loved it. We'd love to do it again. It was great.
Yeah,
we had a little trouble breathing at that altitude, being Florida people, so that was really the only thing we had to stop a few times to breathe.
Yes, you do. When you get up in the mountains, I think it's one of the most beautiful places in the world. I've done quite a bit of traveling, even into very comparable to the Himalayas in northern India and in Tibet. Very comparable. So,
absolutely.
Keep trekking.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
We thank you for the call. I can wake up now. I was just sort of nodding off. You know, I vacation. Sitting on a beach.
That's right. You're a beach guy.
And
the ocean is so beautiful. And you walk into the ocean and put your feet in the water, then you come back and read your book and sit on the beach.
Leave the mountains to you guys.
That's right. This is the opposite of a Tom and Monica vacation.
800-462-7413 is our number. 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, the idea of standing at work is really growing in popularity, But here's some research suggesting that may not be the best idea.
Well, I want to interpret this research. It's quite interesting. First of all, we know, you know, there's a mantra now that sitting is the new smoking, because we know that sitting in and of itself too long is not good for you. I mean, it leads to obesity. It leads to a lack of muscle mass. It leads to cardiovascular problems. On the other hand, stand-up jobs have their own problems, too, because stand-up jobs are different. And this was a very interesting study, but I do want to put this into perspective. It was 7,000 people in Canada, part of the Canadian Community Health Survey, and they looked at people who stood for their jobs. Okay, so they're standing for the jobs. So they're sales clerks, they're cooks, they're bank tellers, they're waiters, they're gate agents, that are at the airport, and they're cashiers. And they looked at cardiovascular health. They looked that they appear to be twice as likely to develop certain things such as heart disease because they were standing up for their job all the time. And so the conclusion was maybe this is a cardiovascular risk factor. If you stand up too much, it's not good for you. And that's interesting. I agree that there may be a factor here. And they said, you know, they should allow the employees to sit down for a job. But I want you to look what the jobs were. So they were people who were standing. They were cashiers. They were bank tellers. They were waiters. They were sales clerks. You have to look at how much money these people make also. In other words, there's a monetary issue. We know that people who make more money have less heart disease on the whole, unless they're obese and they have other factors. That making money gets you better food. You have other things. You go to the gym. You exercise. You have control over your job. They looked at standing, saying, well, the people with these stand-up jobs are having trouble. Well, it's not only trouble. They also make less money. They have more. They may have more stress in their lives. There are other things that go along with it.
Kind of interesting. It'd be really interesting to do some research where people in the same work environment, some are standing and some are sitting.
Well, that would be very good. And we know, for instance, that people with stand-up desks who have back problems do better.
They
don't have as many back problems. We know that, a lot of people have stand-up desks. Within our office at the clinic, we have a couple of nurses who have stand-up desks, and they find their back doesn't bother them. I think there's a moderation key here. I think if you stand up all day at your job, you get tired. I mean, my mother used to work at a department store in Chicago called Weebolts. She worked in the cosmetics counter. She stood up all day, and the only time she sat down is when she ordered new cosmetics. So standing all the time may not be good for you. Sitting all the time may not be good for you. Maybe there's kind of a combination here that we should think about.
See, I've been around a long time.
Yes, you have.
And sat on the job all day. And what I see now, people standing up using keyboards.
Right.
I can't imagine that.
Well, I've used a stand-up desk with a keyboard, and I find it very difficult. I'd rather stand up and move around than use a keyboard.
Yeah, exactly.
On the other hand, I don't have a job where I'm just sort of sitting at my computer all day. So I think I think there's a moderation key here. Very interesting research, though, showing that there's no tailsman, that just standing up is not going to do it. It's that standing up and moving those legs and stuff may be good for you, but standing up too much in a job may have its own factors.
800-462-7413, our number. That's 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, we welcome a listener in Hayward, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Ever since, I think it was in early spring, I was in Texas at the time, I started getting a tingling, quite a tingling in my arms and legs, and I still do. Sometimes it might even go across my chest or my face. Like this summer when everything was blooming, it seemed to be worse. I don't know if that has anything to do with anything. But if I play tennis, a good three sets of tennis, and then go home and do a little yard work, and I go into a deep sleep, and that's the worst. I woke up, it's almost like a numbness.
So it's when you wake up from sleep that you have a tingling in the hands, in the arms?
The arms. It sometimes I don't have to go to sleep. Sometimes I'll just notice it's coming mild. It's been a little more mild.
Is it both arms or just one arm?
It's both and sometimes my legs.
From the elbow down when you're talking about that?
Yes, actually I feel it's the elbow down to the hand. I'll feel it in the elbow, actually.
What do you do for it? By the way, three sets of tennis, that's quite a lot of tennis. How old are you?
I'm only 78.
You're only 78.
I love it.
I'm going to be 78.
78, and you do three sets of tennis.
Well,
yeah, we've got some people behind the screen here. I wonder if they can do three sets of tennis. They're kind of saying, yes, they could, but, you might give them a run for their money.
It's slow tennis. Most of us are retired.
It's slow. It's slow tennis. Yeah. You still got to get the ball in the air and get it down.
I have a picture of the ball slowly going over the net.
Slow motion tennis. It's a special ball that goes from one to the other. What do you do for this tingling?
Well, I went to my doctor.
Yeah, good.
And she just concluded it was anxiety.
Why anxiety?
I don't know. I'm a real kind of excitable person, but I don't think I'm as nervous as people, I appear to be.
I don't think that anxiety is going to cause tingling. The real issue is
you
might be anxious from the tingling, but I don't think anxiety. How long does it take for it to go away?
It varies. How much I think about it. Sometimes it seems if I go out and do things, or ride my stationary bicycle, it seems to go away.
You do an awful lot of exercise here. Three sets of tennis,
do
the garden, and then you ride your stationary bike. What else do you do?
I also hike and kayak.
You also hike and kayak.
Do you ever sit and watch television?
Tom?
Yeah,
Tom?
I do.
See, Tom is a TV guy. You know, his idea of exercise is getting up and turning the channel, even though he's got a hand clicker.
I do work out 3 times a week.
You do work out 3 times a week. Actually, there is no channel to turn on the TV anymore. You can't get up and even change the station. You know, it doesn't sound too bothersome.
One thing I wanted to know. The one time I have this post-nasal drip, and I have my chest and my throat were sore. So I called the ambulance because I had this tingling and numbness. Mm-hmm. And they came out, and they gave, I can't think of the mm-hmm. name they do for heart. They put the things on your chest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They said, I have a heart of a 25-year-old.
Well, that's it. You know what? It doesn't sound to me like it's raised any red flags. I would just deal with it when it happens. Sometimes extra pillows on the bed. Sometimes putting on a little music when you go to sleep will also take your mind away from the tingling.
Okay.
You know, you're 78. When you're 78, you have more aches and pains and tingling than when you're 22.
Could I mention one more thing?
Sure.
I've had, even earlier before this tingling came, I had quite a bit of itching.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to get it quite bad when my husband taught at a university in Kentucky, and in the summers I would get it. And I've been getting that more, and I take this Benadryl.
Benadryl's okay. If you take it too much at bedtime at your age, it can cause some dizziness and falls. We always kind of worry about Benadryl. But if you're bothered on a particular day, you take it at bedtime every so often, it's not going to bother you. Just don't take it every night.
Can you take it?
I take it a couple times a week might be okay if you're bothered.
A couple times a week. Yeah. Sometimes I take it 3 times a day.
Yeah. You take Benadryl 3 times a day. Mm-hmm. Does that work for your itching?
Yeah, it seems to. It doesn't seem to be working quite as well.
Doesn't it make you tired? How many years have you been taking Benadryl 3 times a day?
Well, it isn't always 3 times a day. Mm-hmm. I just take it when I have the itching.
Uh-huh. Does it work? It works for you. Well, if it works for you, keep it up. That's all. Works for you, keep doing it.
Gives me a dry tongue, dry mouth.
Yeah. If it works for it, just keep doing it. So there are other drugs over the counter. Zyrtec might work as well. It might not give you a dry tongue, and it'll be a little bit safer.
Yeah.
Try that.
I'll look into that.
So, well, thanks. You know, I'll let you get back to your exercise.
Okay. I usually don't sit down this long.
Thanks for sharing.
So you don't think it's anything to be concerned?
No, I don't think so. I think you're okay. You take care now.
Thank you. You too, Tom.
We appreciate the call. When I said I exercise 3 times a week, I'm counting this hour as one of those.
It's one of those exercises.
I'm exercising. My mouth is moving.
Exercise. That's right. Moving those calories.
Before we take a break, Zorba, let's crack open the Zorba Pester on your health inbox and tackle a listener email. This one came to us from Karina in Green Bay, Wisconsin. She writes, "Hello, Dr. Zorba and Tom. As someone with a desk job, I have to be vigilant about stretching and exercising to keep my iliopsoas from tightening up and causing lower back pain. About 2 years ago, I underwent a series of sessions of chiropractic and active release technique, which had a remarkable effect, and I've been doing the recommended exercise ever since to great success. Recently, my sister suggested that I get an adjustable bed, which she says has helped alleviate lower back pain for both her and her husband. My question is this: does sleeping with knees and head slightly elevated in the adjustable bed simply give the iliopsoas more opportunity to be short and tighten up? Between flat or with knees and head slightly elevated, is there a better position to sleep in?"
Well, first of all, the real issue if you've got iliopsoas pain and discomfort is stretching exercises. That's the mainstay. And getting them done properly from a physical therapist, going to YouTube on the web, looking at the various iliopsoas stretches. I love YouTube. My son calls it YouTube University.
Mm-hmm.
You know, physical therapists show a lot of exercises. That's really the mainstay. And then in bed, it's what gives you the most comfort. I mean, before you would go and spend a lot of money on a bed that's adjustable, I would just change the pillows in the bed and see if that made a difference. And I would get a trainer or I would go to PT to get the right exercises and see if that works first. You know, beds, I've not been overly impressed by very expensive beds that supposedly get rid of back pain. I have been impressed by the fact that some people need a firmer mattress than others, and that can make a big difference. But that's how I do it. I don't think there's an exact answer to this, whether or not elevating the bed or not elevating the bed is going to make a difference. There are individual differences, especially with this type of muscle pain and cramp. And by the way, it's a very common form of back pain is from the iliopsoas muscle.
Have a healthy living question you'd like Zorba to put to rest? Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
More calls to come, of course, as well as our tasty recipe and another interesting, a tasty recipe, did I say?
Yeah, tasty. It's got beets in it, Tom. Beets, their favorite vegetable.
Another interesting topic to discuss, all coming up on Zorba Pastor and Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here to help you out by answering your questions at 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, the Midwest
Beet
Burger.
That's right.
Okay.
The Midwest Beet Burger. Now I know.
Wake me up when you're done.
I know. No. Beets are your favorite vegetable, aren't they?
Oh, I don't
you
like
love beets.
I don't like beets at all.
It's like beets. When we say beet, you know what? You know, there's only one. I have a question for you. If you have a choice between tofu and beets, what would you eat?
Oh, my goodness. I'd have to think about that for a long time.
You'd have to decide whether or not.
I'd rather have the tofu, because you usually put yummy stuff
on the
with
tofu.
With the tofu,
that's
yeah.
That's what I see. Now,
beets, on the other hand.
My mother loved beets, and my grandfather used to eat beet borscht because he was a Polish, sort of Polish-Lithuanian. Mm-hmm. And I used to watch him. I still remember as a kid, he had a mustache, kind of like I have one, but it was white. And he would eat beets, and as he ate the beet borscht, his mustache would become redder and redder and redder. And I still remember kind of the redness going up because he, anyway, that's what I remember from beets. But anyway, beets, for those people who like beets, and beets are wonderful. People don't eat enough beets.
Why don't I ask our listeners to bug Carl Christensen, our producer, whether you like beets or not, and we'll take a survey.
We'll do a survey, and you know what? At the same time, we'll do a kale survey. I mean, let's do
one at a time.
All right, just
don't
a
lose focus.
Yeah, I now if you have a choice,
I love beets.
Now,
I hate beets.
Now I have a question. Okay, I love beets. I hate beets.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's
and
do
then
it.
You know, I think we should have beets. Beets should supplant kale. Beets are the new kale. That's going to be our slogan. Beets are the new kale.
Okay, let's do this.
Start out with a tablespoonful of coconut oil.
Get it over with it. A big tea coconut oil.
For people who love beets, this is a savory recipe.
A big tea coconut oil.
A medium onion, half a medium onion chopped.
Half a medium onion chopped.
1 cup of grated beets.
A cup of grated beets.
It's great. I can just smell the beets. I just, you know, when I think of beets, it just gives me pleasure just to hold them in my hands and grate them.
Moving right along.
Quarter cup of sunflower seeds.
Quarter cup sunflower seeds.
Not in their shells, Tom. Out of their shells.
Okay.
Not in their shells.
All right.
1 cup of cooked red beans.
Cup of cooked red beans.
An egg. Quarter cup of oat flour.
Quarter cup oat flour.
Quarter teaspoon of cumin.
Quarter little tea cumin.
Quarter teaspoon of garlic.
Quarter little tea garlic.
Quarter cup of rolled oats.
Quarter cup of rolled oats.
And a little bit of salt.
Pinch of salt.
Okay. Are you ready to make this recipe? Your mouth is watering right now in a Pavlovian way. That's right. Tom is sleeping. Start by sauteing your chopped onions in coconut oil for 2 to 3 minutes. If you don't have coconut oil, you can use olive oil instead. Add in the beets, cook over low heat for about 5 minutes, allow it to cool, and then add to the food processor. You put the beets that you've just cooked in the food processor, mm-hmm. along with the sunflower seeds, beans, egg, oat flour, and pulse it just to get the consistency you need, along with the spices. And now you've got your little patties. Pulse it until it's all mixed, a nice pasty kind of thick finish. You don't want to blend it too much so that it's mushy. Mm-hmm. You know, when you take out your food processor and you use it, Tom, you know, if you use it too often, stuff becomes mushy,
what's
right?
What's a food processor?
It's not a word processor. It's a food processor. Okay. Add this to a bowl and mix in the rolled oats, you know, just like my mom used to do to make that burger go farther. Yeah. Mix in the, is your mouth watering yet? Yeah, I can just see it. It'll add a little more structure, and then you make four patties, let them sit out for about 15 or 20 minutes so that the oats can take up that wonderful, delicious moisture from the beets. I know, Tom, you just can't wait to make this. And when you're ready to enjoy it, pop it in the oven and bake it for 400 degrees. You bake this for 10 to 12 minutes until the burger is crisp. Put it on a bun. Top it with a little arugula. You love arugula, Tom. I know that whenever you think of arugula, you just smile.
I don't know whether I love it or not.
A little onion, maybe an avocado, and the Midwest part is a little Wisconsin cheese on top of the whole thing.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I like the cheese
idea. You like the cheese. If you want a Midwest beet burger, and really, for anyone who is a vegetarian, this is a wonderful dish. And if you're a vegan, just don't put on the cheese. I mean, it's a wonderful recipe. Yeah. And I bet people can get this recipe.
How?
They go to ZorbaPastor.org. You can get this recipe, other recipes, great recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org, or, of course, through Facebook.
Beet lovers, don't hate me. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. To the phones now, Zorba. A Sanibel, Florida listener joins us. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
My question is about arthritis. I've not been diagnosed or anything, but it's obvious that my knuckles on my left hand are very large, can't get my ring off, can't make a fist. If I work on it, it'll crack a little and I might make a fist, but I'm wondering, is there a hand surgeon or somebody who can, I don't know, shave down my knuckles or something?
No, unfortunately, the answer is no. There is not a hand surgeon. That doesn't happen. And it turns out you would destroy the joint. You know, you might look better, but you wouldn't be able to use the joint. And it's just, it's part of what happens. It's bony overgrowth. What sort of pain do you have?
I would say not any if I don't want to use it. You know, if I want to knock on a door or anything that's it's sensitive, I can't knock on a door with that hand or... Uh-huh. Make a fist, but if I'm not using it, seldom does it hurt. Just because it's
there. That's really an important point. If it bothers you, anti-inflammatories work. They're worthwhile. One or two Aleve tablets, over the counter Aleve, twice a day will work. But frankly, there's nothing that's really going to decrease this, you know, that particular joint if it's bony overgrowth. There really isn't anything that can be done. Other than getting your ring resized. I mean, that is something you can do.
I've done that twice already. Oh. So they're really on the move. You know, they're much larger than the tip of my finger. Yeah. You know,
Tell me, they're really swollen. Tell me about your mom. Did your mom have this problem?
Slightly. She's 91, still living, but no. You know, a little bit. Nothing. You know, and much later in life than I started. But my grandfather, on my dad's side, was very arthritic all through his body, knees, back, everything, hunched over, couldn't open his hands ever. They were shut.
Yeah. Well, that was in the old days. I mean, nowadays with anti-inflammatories, people could be truly debilitated. I remember when I first started practice back in the late 70s, I had some older arthritic patients. They were in their 80s and 90s, and they were unable to open up their hands. They were so deformed. They were called swan neck deformities, and they were terrible. And I don't see that anymore, and I'm sure it's because of anti-inflammatories. It's around, but it's not nearly as common. Keep moving. Do exercises. Do good strengthening exercises for your hands, arthritic exercises. You can go to YouTube. That's about the best way to keep it from worsening. So,
perfect.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you. Thanks for your call.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. 800-462-7413, our number. That's 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's go to Waukesha, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Zorba. Zorba, I just have to say that talking to you is probably the highlight of my year. I tend to believe that he who laughs loud lives long. As a fellow loud laugher, I appreciate your sense of humor and your very boisterous laugh.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I hope with this laugh that I will live well past 100. That will be the goal. Tom is not... Tom does not... Do you laugh as much, Tom?
What?
That's right. That's exactly. See. Well, thank you.
Let's move along here.
So anyway, I have had, for the past couple of summers, whenever I wear shorts, people have commented about how red my legs look. And it didn't happen until I started wearing shorts and people noticed that my legs were red. And when I go to the doctor, they just say, you know, you have edema, you know, or you know, swelling in the legs.
Okay.
And I am type 2 diabetic, which I don't know if it has anything to do with leg circulation, but I guess I just kind of want to be able to wear shorts again in the summertime. Uh-huh. And I'm wondering what I can do to improve circulation.
First of all, so people come up to you and they go, hey, you've got red legs. Tell me a little bit more about that. Well, are they red or is it swelling? That's the issue.
I think it's both redness and when I feel them, they feel like there's some swelling and some different things.
Yeah.
Now, I am totally blind as well, so I don't notice, you know, the legs being red, but other people do.
Uh-huh.
And my doctor recommended TED stockings, but a lot of TED stockings don't seem to fit me well.
Well, and TED stockings reduce the swelling in the leg. One specific thing that I'm curious about. So if you push on your legs, because you said you're blind, if you push on your legs at night when you go to sleep and you push on your legs in the morning, are they less swollen in the morning?
They are, you know, sometimes swollen in the morning. Now, they used to feel hard at times.
Okay.
But I've lost some weight in the past couple of years.
Uh-huh. How much do you weigh?
I weigh about 315 pounds.
Okay. So part of this circulation is not from the diabetes, but is really from the weight. That is really part of it. One recommendation, or just what they said, TED stockings. There are a variety of stockings besides TEDs. TEDs are a name brand stocking. And you might find one that fits you because they're ones that are of all different sizes. And you want to find a size that fits you because, frankly, those are going to be the size that will reduce the edema. That's one thing.
One thing I've been doing, and I don't know if this is just an idea, but a relative told me that putting coconut oil on the legs.
I don't think that's going to do much. I don't think it's going to do anything for the swelling. And I don't think really it'll do anything for the redness either. So I think I would stay away from coconut oil. I think what I would do is, once again, if you're bothered physically, you know, with that, I would look at compression stockings. The problem is they're hot. So if you're wearing shorts, you're usually wearing shorts when it's hot, and the compression stockings are going to make things hotter. So it's you've got a few options. And one option is to say, thank you so much for commenting on my legs. What else would you like to comment on?
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
And thank you so much for your comments about laughter. I think laughter is really important. It sounds like that's an important part of your MO, too.
We appreciate the call. Thank you. Before the break, Zorba, let's fire off another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
The following email came to us from a listener in France named Christopher. He writes, I listened to an older episode from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health archive that caused some controversy, especially on my side of the Atlantic. In it, Zorba stated that Europeans don't shower nearly as That's much right. as Americans, right. and the French hardly shower at all. Jesus. Tom, on the other hand, defended our personal hygiene habits. Thanks, Tom. At that time, I don't think there was any real evidence to prove or disprove Zorba's hypothesis. But through the miracle of science, we now have some. Some surveys tell us that Europeans shower with about the same frequency as Americans, and the poor French marginally exceed you Yankees.
Yes,
I have provided some graphs to support this. Having worked up a sweat writing this, I am now going to have my second shower of the day. Thanks for a wonderful show.
It's wonderful. So the graph, this graph that we will, can we, we're going to put this graph on our website. The graph will be on the website. So the reality is,
if there's a graph, it must be scientific and true.
So first of all, women tend to shower more than men. No brainer there.
Yeah.
But if you look at the French, so let's look at French women and French men. They practically, I mean, the French men are 70% shower once per day. And the women are closer to 80%. When we look at the USA, it's about the same.
Yeah.
It's right in the same, but men and women in the US shower equally. Mexicans shower much more than they do in the USA. They're up to like 85%.
Yeah.
So Mexico is like, they knock it out of the park. And the Russians are the ones, and the Chinese. The Chinese hardly shower at all. So it's not the French.
Well, now we're going to hear from
Chinese.
It's
the Chinese. They don't shower very much. And the close second are the Russian. Russian men only about 35% shower once per day. And then he did a whole graph of shampoos and showers. So we're graphing what the average number of shampoos are in the showers. Mexico hits it out of the ballpark with Brazil being actually a very close second, close second.
Well, so. Can you say, I'm sorry, France?
I'm sorry, France.
Want to throw some cold water on Zorba? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or Facebook.
More of your calls coming up, of course, as well as another interesting topic. And we'll be hearing from the grammar police, of course. All coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. The Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is our number. But before our next call, Zorba, exposure to pet and pest allergens and reduced asthma risk.
Right. So for a number of years, we have noticed that asthma is on the rise. And about maybe a decade ago, I started thinking that maybe asthma is on the rise because we have an environment that is too sterile. And so naturally, what happens is our body, when we're infants and young children, is we want to develop immunity to basically things that are in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And when we don't have things in the environment that keep on attacking us, we start to attack ourselves. And that produces an increase in autoimmune disease and an increase in asthma. That has been the theory all along. And this particular study actually shows that indeed may be the case. Because they looked at children, they looked at infants that were in environments where they either had exposure to pests such as cockroach, mouse, and mice, within the environment. They could find that when they mm-hmm. examined the home. Or they had pets such as cats and dogs. And indeed, those children had less asthma than children who were brought up in a sterile environment who had more asthma.
That's really interesting. So it's good to have a pet if you have a little
Well, it's good to have a pet. And what's interesting in this is they looked at areas where they have more asthma, which are the inner city. So they looked at Baltimore, Boston, New York City, St. Louis. In other words, it's what we call an enriched environment. These kids are much more likely to get asthma. And in houses that were perfectly clean, environmentally sterile, no cat, no mouse, no mice, obviously, in the house, you know, no dogs, nothing at all. Those kids were at a higher risk than at a house that was not perfectly clean, where there were animals around. And it goes along with this idea that indeed this may be an important issue. And this, by the way, the findings were from the University of Wisconsin, published in Allergy and Clinical Immunology. And I think they're important findings.
Yeah, lots of good reasons to have a pet. And here's another good.
Well, good reasons to have a pet. Also, good reasons to let your kids play in dirt, get in different environments, taking them to a park, taking them outside. In other words, it's not that it's that we can be really too sterile. And having your infants just around all that environmental stuff is good for the child. And I think this really points that out.
My mother used to say you have to have a teaspoon of dirt before you die.
Yeah.
I don't know what that
meant. Did she feed you dirt? Is that what she did? She fed you dirt, mother? I mean, I don't know what kind of cook she was, but I don't think she would. She actually fed you dirt. But it is a good reason to have a pet in the house. Yep. And more importantly, it's a good reason to bring your kids around animals and pets and outside, because this will help possibly prevent them from having asthma and may help prevent them from having other autoimmune diseases. It's an important reason not to raise your child in a sterile environment.
Question for Zorba, 800-462-7413 is the number to call. And we go back to the phones now, Zorba, welcoming a listener in Appleton, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, how can we help?
Well, there's some food companies that are providing what are termed superfoods or vegetable protein foods that are frozen in plastic bags, and then you microwave those bags for 4 to 5 minutes to cook the food. So what I'm wondering is there anything in the plastic bag that could leak out and be not good for you?
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you a question. Do you think it's a great idea to microwave things in plastic?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so we're starting with that premise. I would think it's probably not a great idea, too. Although the plastic might be safe, my first thought would be it's probably not a great idea. So here you have a very good example of a sort of an industrial product. We're making foods. We're getting together foods that we think are superfoods. So we're going to sell it to you as these foods are super. They're better than normal fruits and vegetables. These are like the best of the best. But then we're going to put it in a plastic product, then we're going to have you microwave this plastic product because of convenience, but we're going to still call it a superfood, so we're going to obfuscate the idea that it's in the middle of a plastic product. And so you don't have the best of both worlds. You have a food that may be quite good for you put into an envelope that might not be good for you. Some plastics appear to be safe, but I kind of feel funny. I mean, I've gotten broccoli from the store, and I'll warm it up in plastic, and I go, what am I doing? This is kind of doesn't seem right to me. You know, I just wonder about it. Yeah. What are the superfoods what do they contain?
Well, it's like
kale.
Yeah, kale could be chickpeas.
Mm-hmm. Chickpeas
with a grain of some sort, or a lot of there's like 4 or 5 different combinations I've seen.
Sure. And the reality is taking them and then putting them in a microwave-safe bowl or heating them up on the stove, something like that is better. Not quite as convenient because you got to wash the dish. But the fact is that's what I would do. I mean, I think those combinations are okay. But I always look at a price point. In other words, how much am I paying them to actually chop it up? And then how much am I paying for the label? You know, there's chopping it up, and I'm basically paying somebody to chop it up for me. I'm cool with that. Sometimes I buy chopped vegetables. Sometimes I chop them up. And there's waste when I chop them up. And then how much am I going to pay for the label? You know, is it an extra 50 cents because it says super on it, and it's a pretty label? And I do look at those things at all because I can't get over cost comparing. I'll cost compare until I die. I probably would cost compare my own casket if I could. Maybe I should do that so my kids don't have to bother with it, although I'm going to be cremated. So anyway, the answer is keep up with the superfoods, but I wouldn't microwave them in a plastic bag.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Now, Zorba, let's check in again with your favorite know-it-alls, the Grammar Police. The following email came to us from a listener named Susan in Sussex, Wisconsin. She writes, "Hi, Zorba. Love your show. I've been listening for years, but I had to contact you about your use of tinfoil in your recipe for roasted cauliflower and broccoli soup. You said you can line the pan with tinfoil. It is not tinfoil. It is aluminum foil. Aluminum foil replaced tinfoil in the 1940s. Nice going. My husband has been saying tinfoil for years. Now he thinks it's okay. Thanks for all your good information, Susan, a metallurgical engineer." Hey,
thank you. Thank you so much for correcting me. And probably for the rest of my life, I will call it tinfoil, even though I know that there's no tin involved with it at all.
But do you want to tell her husband, cut it out?
Yeah, cut it out. That's right. Cut it out. That's right.
Do you want to be a foil for Zorba's shiny ego?
Oh, my goodness.
Join the Grammar Police by posting on our Facebook page or sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Back to the phones now, Zorba, as we welcome a listener in Bloomfield, New Jersey. Hi.
How you doing?
Fine. How can we help?
So about a year and a half ago, I woke up with tinnitus in my left ear. So I haven't been able to hear in that ear since, and there's constant ringing. I went to a few doctors, and they didn't really know what the cause was. They just told me it was nerve damage, which they said is irreversible.
Uh-huh. Nerve damage from what? How old are you?
I'm only 26.
Yeah, you're not. Mm-hmm.
That's what was. I think bothered me the most is that I never really had a real straight answer of what caused it. I mean, a week before, I was snorkeling, mm-hmm. and then the day before, I heard a loud noise.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. How loud a noise did you hear the day before?
It was real loud. Mm-hmm. I was testing a fire alarm system, mm-hmm. so it was loud.
Okay.
But when I told the doctor that, he said that should have caused damage to both of my ears, mm-hmm. not just one.
Uh-huh. So you had your ear examined. How many doctors have you gone to?
I went to an ENT as mm-hmm. well as an audiologist.
Okay. What did the audiologist say?
I don't know. She did some tests, and okay. I just know that my hearing was just very minimal and in the one ear.
Uh-huh.
And my other one was perfectly normal.
And the ENT doc, what did the ENT doctor say?
He wasn't very helpful either. He basically just told me how to cope with the noise.
Uh-huh.
He said there wasn't any visible mm-hmm. damage to the structure. That's uh-huh. why they determined it was nerve damage.
Any change in the hearing that you have at all?
Very minimal. If I put a speaker up to my left ear, I mm-hmm. can hear kind of a muffled sound.
When you're around loud noises now, you're using hearing protection, right?
For sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. All I got is one ear.
Do you go on you live in New Jersey, do you go on the subway at all in New York City? Do you get into the city at all?
Not much, but okay. for my job, mm-hmm. I do have the fire alarm system, so mm-hmm. I constantly protect my other ear.
Okay, so you've got a good earphones that go on and protect that other ear?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. How good are they? How much money did you spend?
Well, probably not enough.
Uh-huh.
You probably invest a little more into that. Do you recommend something?
Yeah, go to Amazon.com, and I've got a couple when I use my blower, and I think it costs $20, and I put it on, and all of a sudden it's, oh, my God, I can't hear anything. I can even hear myself think. So it's completely on there. So the first thing you want to do is get these hearing muffs that go on. They're tight on your head, and they are you will be amazed at how you don't hear a damn thing on there. I mean, it's really absolutely there. Well worth the investment. You want to make sure that other ear doesn't have anything wrong with it at all. And frankly, I would take it with you, and when I go on airplanes and things like that, I'd put them on. And I have one. I'm going to get a couple up here and keep them in different places because they're going to go in my knapsack when I get on airplanes. Because the tinnitus can be the issue, and that will decrease it. So number one, I'd get a second opinion. Because I would say, I want to know what's going on. I'd bring all my stuff with me and say, what other tests can be done? Is there anything I can do? And then if not, if the tinnitus bothers you, I would look at cognitive behavioral therapy, which is very effective. It allows you not to think about it when you're thinking about it. So the thing about tinnitus is interesting because I have it. When I talk about it, I can hear it. So right now as I'm talking, I can hear the crickets in my ears. But it usually doesn't bother me. And if it does bother me, I know a way to get to the other side of it, either by turning on some music to listen to or just sweating my brain so I don't actually do it. And that's another important part of it. But your first thing is you've got to get online or go to a store and get these really good hearing muffs that just get rid of all that sound to protect your other.
So. Right. Thanks for the help.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
We appreciate that call. At 800-462-7413. And before we head out today, Zorba, it's always nice when our listeners are inspired to share their stories with us. The following email came to us from Kathy, who listens on KSFC in Spokane, Washington. Dear Dr. Zorba, recently I heard you ask, when did your mother first serve you avocado? I'm in my mid-60s, grew up in a Seattle suburb, and can't remember when I tasted my first avocado, not because of memory loss, but because it was a staple in our unusual household. When other moms were serving TV dinners and other early processed food, we enjoyed food that we'd grown, gleaned, or picked. Everything from clam digging, oyster picking, wild blackberry picking, chanterelle mushroom picking, to gardening artichokes, rhubarb, tomatoes, apples, peaches, cherries, and walnuts, plus our own eggs and chickens made it to our table. To this day, we fight over the avocados in the huge tossed salad that is a mainstay of every extended family get-together. I feel blessed to have been brought up with a diverse diet and an appreciation of what it takes to put food on the table. We may not have been money-rich, but we were certainly experience and food-rich. My daughter called me once just to say thanks, and when I asked for what, her response was, thanks for putting real food in front of me as a kid. And thanks for what you do, Zorba.
Oh, how nice. What a nice letter. And so amazing because, you know, when you grow your own food, you then know what that food is. You really appreciate it because you appreciate all the work that goes into the food that you grow. What a very nice comment.
Yeah, you two are really, really magnificent people.
But it sounds like she grew up in a food-rich environment, and that's quite interesting. As she said, we didn't have a lot of money, but we had a lot of food.
Yeah,
and
that's
a lot
true.
Of
that's really, that's
food,
a good
which
thing.
Which is really good.
Yeah.
Right.
Have a story to share? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast,
visit us on the web at ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1021Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.